This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. New rules about medical privacy took effect on Monday, and some things have changed. You know that postcard you get from the dentist to remind you of your next appointment? Expect it in an envelope next time. When you sign in at the doctor's office, you'll no longer be asked to write down why you came. And if you visit somebody at the hospital, you may not get in unless you've been pre-approved by the patient. These changes and many more are mandated by the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA for short. For patients, they're a whole new set of rights. For the first time, patients can have full access to their own medical records and even proposed changes. For doctors, pharmacies, and hospitals, it's a whole new set of regulations that could cost thousands of dollars in fines and even prison time if they're violated. Today, we'll walk you through the rules and how they affect everybody involved. We'll also take your calls and questions. If you're a patient, do you think these rules go far enough? If you're a doctor or a nurse, are you concerned about how much it's going to cost to comply? If you're an employer, are you clear on what these rules mean for you? Our telephone number is 1-800-989-TALK. That's 1-800-989-8255. And our email address is totn@npr.org. First, let's do a little talking about how we got here. Joining us now in Studio 3A is NPR's Julie Rovner. Good of you to be with us.
Hi, Neil.
Even though these rules just went into effect, they are hardly new.
They are hardly new. They've been kicking around since 1996. They were actually ordered by Congress in that law that you talked about, HIPAA, which actually had nothing to do with privacy. It was a health insurance continuation law. But as part of that law, Congress actually had a section called administrative simplification, trying to make it easier to transmit information electronically. The idea was to save the health system money. There were a lot of people concerned that if we're going to make it easier to transfer health information around in cyberspace, maybe we should do a little bit more to protect the privacy of that information. And that was really the origin of this. Since then, it's been through at least five major revisions. The Clinton administration changed the proposal three times. The Bush administration has changed the proposal twice. So there's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing and backing and forthing on these rules.
Are there clear winners and losers?
Well, yes and no. I think this is really a compromise. The balance has always they tried to strike between giving people privacy of their information and allowing the health system to continue to run efficiently. And that's been the give and take here. Do you need the issue's really been played out in whether or not for routine health purposes, what they call treatment, payment, and health operations, that whether you'd have to give permission to have your information used before that could happen. There were several iterations that said you would have to give permission. The health industry said that would be really very unwieldy, that people wouldn't be able to pick up their relatives' prescriptions. And so actually the Clinton administration changed it twice. The last version said that you would have to give permission. Then the Bush administration came in, started to say that they'd let the last rule take effect, and then the last iteration that's gone into effect says you don't have to give permission, but you have to be notified. So it's that's been part of this balancing act that's gone back and forth.
One other thing, rules, not law.
Rules, not law. Congress actually set itself, tried to set itself a trap. It said in 1996, we are going to give ourselves, Congress, 3 years to come up with legislation to address medical privacy. If we don't, then we're going to kick it to the administration to do it themselves. They did try. There were several different bills. Could not come to any kind of agreement. The deadline passed. It got kicked to the administration again. The Clinton administration dealt with it over a couple of years. Then the Bush administration came in, and it's been struggling with it, and now they're finally taking effect.
Normally, when Congress can't come to an agreement, it's because they're being pulled and tugged by very powerful different interest groups.
Yes, and I think that's the same thing that we've seen going to the administration again, sort of the arguments between the privacy advocates who are concerned that people really have control over their own medical information and the health industry who is concerned, yes, about privacy, but also about allowing it to care for patients. I mean, this has really been an issue of what's the best patient care.
Mm-hmm. There was also an issue of marketing of drugs.
There was. Well, there's an issue of marketing in general about whether or not your health information can be used to sell you things. That's basically the marketing issue. That's been changed several times. Currently, under the rules, marketing is banned. You would have to give permission in order to be marketed to, but there is an exception within this health plan operations where some of your information could be used by the health plan to perhaps say, well, there's a new drug that might be of help to you, or there's a new treatment that might be of help to you. Privacy advocates say that's a big loophole that needs to be closed. The health plans say, no, that's something that will improve patient care. Again, this continual what's best for the patient.
And is this the final word for the foreseeable future?
Oh, I imagine it's not. The administration administration can, as they've pointed out, can revise the rules once a year if they want to. So they could come back this year and do another revision. And I think as we see it start to play out, as these rules really start to have impact on patients, now they've technically been in effect for 2 years while providers were getting ready, but patients have only really seen it since Monday. There may be some changes that need to be made. Also, members of Congress have introduced new bills saying, we don't like the changes that the Bush administration made, so we want to go back and change it so they were the Clinton administration's last rules. We've seen an awful lot of bills introduced. We haven't seen Congress act on any of them.
Okay. Julie Rovner will be keeping track of all of that as NPR's healthcare reporter. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
Julie Rovner was here with us in Studio 3A. We're going to continue our discussion about the new medical privacy rules. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Melinda Hatton. She is Vice President and General Counsel of the American Hospital Association. Good of you to be with us.
Thank you.
And with us also is Dr. Jeffrey Hausfeld, a practicing physician, the CEO of HIPAA Innovations, a company that trains other doctors how to implement the new privacy regulations. He's on the phone with us from his office in Bethesda, Maryland. Good of you to be with us, sir.
A pleasure.
Ms. Hatton, let's start with you. Can you walk us through some of these changes? How do these regulations change visits to the hospital, the doctor's office, or the pharmacy?
Well, I think from the patient's perspective, walking in the hospital door now, I like for most providers, and Dr. Hausfeld can certainly talk about this from physicians, is that now every patient is going to receive a notice of the privacy practices of how the hospital takes these rules and is putting them into effect. And very importantly, what rights the patient has under these new rules and how they can exercise those rights. So they'll not only see a copy posted somewhere prominently on the wall, but they'll also be given a copy and ask, as Julie indicated, to acknowledge that they've received these important rights. Mm-hmm. Something else that I think is going to be very important for hospital patients is that they are going to be asked whether or not they wanted to be included in the hospital directory. And what that means for a patient is if somebody calls and asks for them by name, they ask for Neil Conan, can the hospital tell them that you're there and what room you're in and give a very simple one or two word description of what your condition is? Is it fair? Is it good? Is it serious?
In my case, crazier than
that. It has to be one or two words, so it would have to be short. But patients will always be asked if they want to be included in the directory, and if they don't, when someone calls for them and, again, asks for them by name, then no information will be given out.
So it's either in or out. You can't say, I want these people admitted to get information and these people not.
You can make some reasonable requests in that regard. For example, you could say, I want my friends and family to know I'm here, but please don't let any media calls through. Mm-hmm. And the hospital would have to make its very best effort to make sure that no media calls got through. Now, you know, as you know, the media is endlessly resourceful, so that can be a daunting job. But they certainly will make every effort to comply with any reasonable request in that regard that a patient makes.
Dr. Hausfeld, was this law necessary?
Oh, there's no question that the law was necessary, and it's a very forward-thinking law. When you think of what's going to happen to patient information over the next decade, this really sets the stage for healthcare providers, for hospitals, for insurance companies to be more than just good stewards of patient information, but excellent stewards of private healthcare information. What's going to happen when you come into my office in 10 years from now is I'll take a swab of the inside of your mouth and I'll put it in a little microcomputer chip and I will have an entire readout of your genetic profile.
Yeah, it's interesting that these regulations took effect the same week they completed the human genome.
Right. And that information is going to be stored in some computer in my office with information as to whether or not you're going to get Alzheimer's, whether or not you'll get cancer, whether or not you react well or not well to certain medications. But that kind of information, think of what would happen if that fell into the wrong hands. And it can just by being a keystroke away.
Let's get listeners involved. Our phone number again is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address, TOTN@npr.org. What questions do you have about HIPAA, the new regulations that cover medical privacy? How will it affect you and the way you deal with your business if you're in the healthcare industry or, I guess at one point or another, all of us are patients. So anyway, let's get callers. Michael is joining us from Akron, Ohio.
Yes. I totally agree with the doctor about the disclosure of information and the widespread dissemination of patient information. We began getting ready for HIPAA last year, and right now I'm sitting with a copy of a document the APA, the American Psychological Association, prepared, entitled Getting Ready for HIPAA, What You Need to Know Now. And to tell you the truth, I really don't know anything from having attended either the workshop or having read this. The only thing I know now, I don't know what I need to do other than the fact that I need to have certain consents released and I need to release the information to the patient. I'm working in private practice here in Akron with a psychologist. I'm his psychology assistant.
And it may be that the reason that you don't see a big change is because the mental health profession was under much stricter guidelines in the release of patients' protected health information than the rest of the medical industry was before the HIPAA regulations went into effect.
Well, there is a change, but I don't see a change for the better. In fact, this is actually a change for the worse.
In what way?
Well, in Ohio, and I'm certain this is true in a number of other states, the state psychology laws were set up to protect the patient, and the disclosure of information has been on a need-to-know and under assigned release of information. And there's always a caveat somewhere saying that you may not release information if it may be harmful. Now, the psychologist I work with, he and I have a policy that any psychological information has significant potential for harm, and it's treated as hazardous waste. It's hazardous material.
So, in other words, disposed of extremely carefully.
Right. Disposed of and disclosed of. Under HIPAA, which supersedes Ohio psychology law, you can release the information to the patient, and they can also designate a third party to receive it.
Let me check with Melinda Hatton on that. Does it supersede Ohio law?
Actually, one of the important things that the drafters of the law did was to ensure that these federal rules wouldn't supersede more protective, stricter state laws, which obviously adds a level of complication for all sorts of doctors and hospitals and pharmacies, because not only must you determine and learn how to comply with HIPAA, but you need to be aware of where HIPAA's been superseded by your state laws. A group of healthcare organizations actually, including the one that I represent, actually has funded nearly a 50-state study at the cost of over $1 million just to help hospitals and other providers understand what those laws are and where they're superseded. So you might want to contact some of your professional associations in that state, and I think they can help you unravel some of those issues.
And Dr. Hausfeld, I know that some physicians have complained that this is a lot more paperwork for them, an unfunded mandate.
Unfortunately, in its initial stages, it is. This requires us to do more things in our office in terms of the operations of our office and the systems flow of our office than we did before. But in the long run, it will make us more productive and more efficient because of the next phase that will come along is called the Transactions and Coding Law. And that's going to be the place where physicians will see a return on this investment because it will simplify the way that we submit claims to an insurance company, simplify the way they remit monies to us, and make our revenue cycle much shorter.
We're talking about the new regulations on privacy and medicine. More after a short break. 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about new federal regulations. I'm even having trouble pronouncing it, designed to keep medical records private. Our guests are Melinda Hatton of the American Hospital Association, Dr. Jeffrey Hausfeld, CEO of HIPAA Innovations, and NPR's Julie Rovner has reemerged here in Studio 3A. You're invited, of course, to join our discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And Julie, we were talking just before the break about whether this federal law, HIPAA, or federal set of regulations, HIPAA, supersedes state laws, and in some cases it does, and in some others it doesn't.
Well, that was one of the big issues. This was one of the issues that really prevented Congress from coming to agreement on a law. The healthcare industry, the providers, were really unhappy about having to abide by 50 different sets of state laws in, you know, all of these issues where they're moving information around sort of between states. But this was clearly one of the big issues. The privacy advocates were very, very firm that they did not want to supersede state laws, particularly in the issue of mental health, sexually transmitted diseases. Those were sort of the two issues where a lot of states already have privacy laws. And the regulations have been fairly particular in that stronger state laws on those issues will be allowed to stand.
Okay.
And this becomes an issue in an area like Washington, D.C., where we're really in a tri-state area and different local laws do apply.
Same in New York, obviously, and in any number of other jurisdictions. Let's get listeners back involved. Doug joins us now from Newport News in Virginia.
Hi, Neil. I'm a pastor of a United Methodist congregation here in Newport News, and last week I received a mailing from a retirement community where my church occasionally provides worship services or Bible studies, and we were told that all volunteers, religious or otherwise, who volunteer in this retirement community needed to go through HIPAA training, which is fine with me, but I'm curious if that's characteristic across the country or if that's something maybe isolated in this particular area, whether or not volunteers are going to be expected, volunteers who work in medical establishments will be expected to be trained in the HIPAA rules.
Melinda Hatton?
Absolutely. Everyone at the hospital or any healthcare organization, from the CEO down to the volunteers, is expected to have some level of HIPAA training so that they'll understand these new federal rules and how they need to change their or alter their behavior and their behavior toward patients in order to comply with them. I'm actually glad to hear that your organization is going to provide some HIPAA training to the volunteers, because I think that should be a good thing for you and for the patients that you serve.
What it shouldn't result in, though, is HIPAA hysteria, where people are afraid to learn about it, or that we impose it on people who are really not intended to hear protected health information. Let's say a repairman comes to my office to do the copy machine. Do I have to know that he's trained in HIPAA in order to do my repair? The answer is no, because that is an incidental disclosure. Now, some things are interesting in that pharmaceutical representatives come to doctors' offices all the time. And although they're not required to be HIPAA trained because they're there and they're not intended to receive that protected health information, it is a repeated exposure of private health care information. And the question is, do they have to be held to a different standard?
Doug, thanks very much. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Neil.
Here's an email we got from John Byron Boyd in Nashville. I support confidentiality, but at least one portion of this legislation, he calls it, it's a set of regulations, is unnecessary if not absurd. My chiropractor recently told me that, among other restrictions, this law prohibits them from calling me without permission on the grounds that someone else who might answer the phone could learn of a medical problem I wish to keep secret. I suggest that any who do not wish their health to be public should not give their physicians a phone number that might be answered by those they do not wish to have it. Is that right, Dr. Hausfeld?
Well, what he's saying is it's not right, in that if the patient gives you a phone number and that number is the one in your chart, I can call that number and leave you a message. Now, I don't have to leave specifics on that message machine saying your HIV test came in or your Prozac prescription is renewed. You can leave a general message saying that you called, that Dr. Hausfeld called you and would appreciate a call back. So doctors have to create a culture of privacy amongst their staff so that they understand if they're leaving a message on an unattended machine, it doesn't have to be a specific message. But the law states
States, we have to make a reasonable effort to go that extra mile to make sure that what we're doing is in the patient's best interest.
Melinda?
And patients have the right to make reasonable requests about how and where you leave information. So if you prefer to have information left at your home and not your office, you should make that request to your healthcare provider. Again, if it's reasonable, healthcare providers, whether it's your doctor or hospital or pharmacist, I'm sure will make every effort to comply with that.
Okay. Let's go now to Marika, who's with us from Buffalo, New York.
Hi. You know, one of your guests mentioned HIPAA hysteria, and I think my concerns fit into that idea. I'm very in favor of privacy. I'm 20 now and expect that over the course of my lifetime, insurance companies may try and control my care based on what we know genetically about where I'm headed in the future. So I'm concerned about privacy, but at the same time, I think that in healthcare, I also rely very heavily on friends and family and their support. And I'm concerned that the red tape will become so thick and hard to get through that I won't be able to ask them to make appointments for me or call on my behalf to the doctor's office and take those extra steps that make giving healthcare easier. And I wonder, you know, how can we get information about how as healthcare consumers we get through the privacy tape and can get information.
Anybody want to volunteer for that one, Dr. Hausfeld?
Well, certainly it's important for patients to understand what these laws mean. Just this week, since the law was enacted, I've encountered at least three episodes where people have misused because they didn't understand these laws. A patient came to see me from York, Pennsylvania, which is a far distance to Washington, D.C., and I needed to have some medical records. I called the other facility, I asked for the medical records, and they said based on the HIPAA regulations, they were not allowed to send me the records unless the patient went there in person and signed a release to authorize that information to be sent. Well, that's wrong. Communication between providers for the purpose of treating an individual is allowed. And a fax transmission isn't even considered an electronic transmission of data. So there are certain misconceptions that the medical community has to understand, but patients have to understand their rights as well. That patient, if she knew, could have challenged that person and say, listen, you are allowed to send me the medical records because it's in my best interest. And really, this law does not intend to inhibit the access or to the quality of care to you as an individual.
Melinda Hatton, it sounds as if it's going to be a while. I mean, it's going to take a while to settle out for people to sort of agree what these rules mean. But until then, Marika's concerns might be valid.
Well, I think your concerns are very valid. And this rule is a very sweeping rule, and it applies to every segment of the healthcare industry. So it tries to take the same rule and apply it to hospitals and doctors and health insurance companies. So there's bound to be some untangling that's required. And I think there is a lot of confusion on the part of providers who are trying to comply with the spirit but may not understand the letter of the regulation. But one thing I think that should help is from your providers are going to give you a privacy notice to tell you how they're going to implement their privacy policies. Take a look at that notice, and if you have questions, for example, can my mother, can my sister, can my brother call and get information, you should call and ask. I think one of the best things about this privacy notice is that the privacy notice is going to tell you how you can go about getting your questions like this answered on privacy. They'll give you a name and address and sometimes a phone number, but you'll know how to get these questions answered because the rules are different when you're talking about somebody who's involved in your care as opposed to somebody who may just be interested in your care. And so those kinds of distinctions are definitely going to take a while to sort out.
And it's going to require the healthcare provider to have some insight and to really act as a good agent for our patients.
Marika, thanks very much.
Thank you.
In the headlines here at NPR News today, U.S.-led forces in Iraq have captured Saddam Hussein's half-brother, a person who may be able to reveal some of Saddam Hussein's government secrets. NPR's Jennifer Ludden is covering that story and the question of what's become of the other top Iraqi leaders. And today, we learned of the death of Dr. Robert C. Atkins, the author of The Atkins Diet. Atkins suffered a head injury earlier this month. Later this hour, we'll remember the man whose low-carbohydrate theory sparked sharp controversy among health experts. And you can also hear those stories and more later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Here on Talk of the Nation, we're talking about medical privacy. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. And I wanted to read an email we got from Fred in Somerville, Massachusetts. How do these new rules affect patients who come to the hospital unconscious? Will it be harder for relatives to find out if the person is at the hospital? Doctor, is that an issue?
I'm going to let Melinda handle that one.
Actually, the rules, I talked earlier about being included in the directory, and the rules are if you can ask a patient about whether or not they want to be in the directory so that friends and family can find them, you're supposed to do that. If a patient comes in unconscious, then hospitals are required to use their best professional judgment to determine whether or not the patient should be in the directory and you can release some information. And so hospitals, obviously depending on the particular situation, hospitals will decide one way or the other. If you've been in the hospital before and expressed a preference, they'll very likely just use that past preference. I think in all cases, hospitals understand how concerned friends and relatives are going to be, and I'm sure they're going to err on the side of putting a patient's information in the directory unless there's some really unusual or extraordinary circumstances where, again, their best professional judgment, they think they probably shouldn't.
Okay.
Neil, I think that the thing that people have to understand is that these rules are scalable to the facility that we're talking about, whether it's a big hospital, whether it's a single doctor in a private office. They're flexible in that regard, and they require us to make a reasonable effort to comply with these regulations. Now, as healthcare providers, we understand that our most important asset is the relationship that we have with the patients. And we will try to improve that relationship, but this is a very rapidly changing environment, and people have to be patient with us. Mistakes will happen. We are human. But if we utilize this foundation, we will become better stewards of patients' protected information.
Let's go to Gary, who joins us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks.
Good. I'm a sales rep for an oxygen company. And this week, many of the doctors that I see have stopped allowing the sales reps into the back to actually speak with the doctors. So it's greatly diminished the ability of sales reps to be able to sell their product. I was wondering if that's accurate or if the doctors are just overreacting or if this is going to be a trend.
I just wrote an article about this, Neil, on the effect of HIPAA regulations, physicians, and pharmaceutical and other representatives. Again, this is HIPAA hysteria in that anyone who comes in who's not intended to receive protected health information, you do not have to have a business associate agreement with that person. So there are a lot of doctors out there who really are using this as an excuse to say, I really don't have time to talk to you. I'm under the constraints of managed care. I have 10 people waiting for me, and I'm going to use this as a means of shutting you out. But it really is not meant to do that. If the doctor really looks at it and acts as a good agent for their patients and can discern a sales pitch versus good medical information that will help their patients or products that the doctor can use to give patients an alternative as samples, then that doctor will maintain that relationship.
So, Gary, if they don't want to see you, it's personal. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Another email, this one from Jane Moyer in California, I think Santa Rosa. I'm VP of Human Resources for a mid-size agricultural company in California. 60% of our workforce is Spanish-speaking. Because of cultural and language barriers, my department is constantly asked by employees to intercede with healthcare providers on their behalf. What to do? Melinda Hatton?
Well, just to just to make a note that where there's a population that speaks another language, much of this information, in fact, all this information, should be translated into that language, so that the patients can have easy access to this privacy information. It's another requirement of a HIPAA, but I think one that hospitals would likely do anyway. If a patient wants to have someone who is involved in their care work with them and get information, the patient certainly has every right to do that. I think something fundamental to keep in mind about these HIPAA rules is they really try to give the patients as much control over their information as is reasonable in the healthcare system. And so if a patient wants to disclose or wants disclosed information to somebody who's involved in their care, the patient has every right to make that request, and that request should be honored by the providers. In some cases, the providers may want, for their own, you know, for their own purposes, some written authorization from the patient. But in every case, they'll try to work with the patient to, again, make sure that those who are involved in their medical care can get the kind of information they need to help out in whatever way is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. And I assume that same answer would cover this email question from Claire Durst. My husband has trouble hearing. I routinely attend every medical meeting he needs. I have legal authority to do so, but is this going to affect me? Am I going to have to haul along power of attorney with me every time he needs something? And what you're saying, no.
Absolutely not. Okay. That because she's involved in the care, that everything that she needs to know about that care should be able to be readily disclosed to her, and she shouldn't have any problem getting that information and being able to use that information again to help with her husband's care.
Dr. Hausfeld, just before we leave the subject, and we just have a minute or so left, this regulation gives the patients the opportunity to look at and correct their medical records. Are you or any of the providers you've spoken with worried that this could compromise the accuracy? Is this going to be a big hassle, too?
Well, one of the things that providers, and I teach this to them all the time, is that the actual physical records are your property, are the doctor's property. The information that's contained in those records belongs to the patient. So never, ever give a patient an actual medical file to look at. You can copy it. They can review the copy. They can ask for an amendment to something that's in there, but never give them the actual physical file because of exactly what you said. They can alter something that really shouldn't be altered. Now, this has the potential for great abuse. So I want patients to realize, amend something that needs to be amended, but don't use it to your advantage when you have misspoke to your doctor or you're trying to hide something.
Okay. We're going to have to leave it there, but I want to thank both of our guests, or all three of our guests. Julie Rovner was here with us in Studio 3A. Thanks, Julie.
Thanks, Neil.
We were just listening to Dr. Jeffrey Hausfeld, CEO of HIPAA Innovations. He was with us from his office in Bethesda. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And Melinda Hatton, Vice President and General Counsel of the American Hospital Association, was also here with us in Studio 3A, and thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you.
When we come back from the break, we'll remember Diet Dr. Robert Atkins, plus international condemnation grows over crackdowns in Cuba. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.